on the side of the oppressors or the oppressed. And there is no such thing as a neutral side, because staying neutral, you are automatically a part of on the side of the oppressors, because you're not trying to make any active change to, change the system that you're in. You're just happy living in the system that you are in now. It Even if you were middle class, you are closer to the oppressed rather than the oppressors. Would you like to talk to my friend? Because
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
what's your experience, Diva? She can give maybe better experience as someone who is treated in a quote unquote, I put quotes very heavily, quote unquote, better position,
Okay.
because she does have family in some sort of government, not DPR, but like some sort of. So for me, I mean, those news back then were definitely terrifying, and it definitely was terrifying, and everything happening back then feels overwhelming to everyone, obviously. Like Angie mentioned earlier, that there was a time where it felt unsafe just to go outside, right? Not even because of the demonstration themselves, but because the police were hitting anyone and anything inside, like people, cars, like you name it. It was pure chaos. And at that time, I had to go home and catch a shuttle, right? My dad works for the government, right? And I'm not here to defend him or say like he's one of the good ones. No, ugh, but it's been shocking to see how he's been silenced or threatened for speaking out. Like, he criticized the decision, like the recent allowance raise for the higher officials, saying like, why raise it when so many aren't doing their jobs, right? And even for just saying that could risk his position. So like, when I went to Jakarta during those chaotic days, it was heartbreaking to see damage everywhere. And my dad told me something that really stuck. Like, he said, some of the scenes are almost si seem staged. Like Angie mentioned it earlier, like it seems staged, especially when the DPR houses was raided. It was strange how the police were everywhere at first, right? They were hitting people, they were arresting people, they were everything, they were everywhere. But when this happened, like suddenly they were nowhere to be found. Like, from my perspective, it's a complicated feeling, because of my dad's position, I cannot join the demonstration directly, and that makes me feel conflicted. Like, don't get me wrong, I recognize my privilege and I'm grateful for it, but it also limits how openly I can participate. Like, yeah, still, I've been doing what I can, speaking out online, reposting information, donating, and employing voices. And it's been really moving to see so many others doing the same. But my God, I feel like I'm, if I go out there and then somehow I got kidnapped or I got arrested, like, they're gonna like, who's your dad? And I was gonna, and my dad will like lose his position, which would be saddening, not just for my family, but like, now he cannot, like if
Yeah,
my
of
God,
course, hypothetical. Yeah.
then now he cannot like do anything from up there if I got arrested, like butterfly effect, like, so
Absolutely.
icky, it's so icky, but like, that's my perspective, and that's it.
It silences like a lot of people on the inside, I guess, who recognize the faults of the government. If they wanted that change, they're basically locked in a position where they can't say anything.
Exactly. Yeah, but that's it from me, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining in for the interview too. It was really nice to be able to talk to you about this, especially from like a different perspective on everything.
Thank you for listening. This is
Yeah,
really you're
absolutely.
doing right now.
I just wanted to say like a really quick thank you to Angeline too. Yeah,
LOL.
thank you so much for doing this. Applaud your bravery and see you soon, hopefully.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
appreciate your generosity. Each year, for a week, we host Fund Drive, our annual fundraising campaign that augments our budget and supports our operations. It is thanks to you that we can rise higher and reach further.
Yes, thank you for donating to Fund Drive 2025. I'm Jesse, this is Speak Up. Thanks also to Flo for that interview about protests in Indonesia. Important stuff. And happy to have Florentina on board producing interviews and participating in the department. We're going to take a quick musical break and then we'll be back with more talk. This is new music from Kokoroko. It's called My Father in Heaven.
When I look into your eyes, all my pain and sadness dies. Even when I sleep at night, there you are in my dreams with a tear.
Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University. I'm Jesse. You just heard My Father in Heaven by Kokoroko. And before that we heard an interview from new volunteer Flo, and now we're going to hear another interview from a new volunteer. Well, not so much an interview, but a bit of a review and a preview and a little bit of talk about an upcoming play. This is Katie, who now hosts the Friday noon open mic. And she attended a play and a preview of a play and was excited to share that with us. So let's get into it.
Hey, this is Katie from the open mic on Fridays at 12, here to tell you about a play I went to that is going on right now called The Best Restaurant in the World Ever. It's this really endearing story about all these people who work in a restaurant and they're all hilariously used to their chef's wacky and somewhat concerning tendencies. Meanwhile, they all have their own personal juicy drama going on. This show was filled with suspenseful questions like, how's this love triangle going to end? And what's the apocalypse going to look like? And most importantly to me, what is going on with Rhea's couch? It is a really refreshing combination of silliness and reality that makes you genuinely connect to all the characters on their own individual journeys that come together. While I was there, I also got to talk to a recent SFU graduate, Lachlan Harris-Faisal, who played Bruno. We chatted about his transition out of university, his favorite moments from the play, and his current work for his studio in East Van, The Wormhole. The best restaurant in the world ever is playing at Jericho Arts Center until November 16th. Here's the interview. When did you graduate SFU?
I graduated like literally a month ago.
Yeah, so how has that transition been going from like doing plays with SFU to doing a play like by yourself kind of?
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been weird. I mean, I feel like at SFU, like the SCA promotes such a like do-it-yourself type vibe where a lot of it is like, okay, this is performance creation, you're gonna make your own show, and you know we work a lot with devising and kind of like more contemporary techniques like that. And so going into the professional world outside of school and doing a show that is not using these techniques has been, it's been really refreshing. It's been fun to be like, okay, great, I have this fantastic toolbox that the SCA gave me, and now I'm going out and I get to use it in not a space where I'm creating, but in a space where I'm taking someone else's source material and I'm, you know, putting that on in their play, but still getting to like live within that as like the character allows, which is, it's been fun, it's been great. Yeah.
Is there anything that you learned from SFU that you like specifically applied to this performance?
God, let me think. I feel like I learned definitely, I didn't use as much like of the creation techniques of like, okay, this is how you make a show, because obviously the show's already made, but definitely I took a lot of the techniques that I learned in like my voice and movement courses, you know, like, I feel like always for any show, you know, I'm gonna warm up properly, I'm gonna like get into my body, right, I'm gonna you know, warm up my voice in a way that is, you know, good for what I want to do for the character. So definitely I use a lot of those techniques that SFU taught of just like how to be an actor, right? So a lot of that great stuff.
Yeah, I also saw that you did dance with SFU.
I did, yeah.
So I was wondering, like, do you feel like the skill of dancing connects with the skill of acting, and they kind of influence each other?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, not a lot of people think this, but I do feel like, you know, in a way, like, dance is theater, right? I think that, and vice versa as well. I feel like it's all performance at the end of the day, and it was so cool to be in the dance rep show last year. You know, I mean, I'm really grateful to Rob Kitsos for that. He's such a fantastic choreographer and professor. And being brought into that show was really, it was very eye-opening for me because I hadn't really done a lot of dance before that. And so I was like, okay, this is a whole new performance technique. And that actually has brought a ton of, it's brought a lot more perspective into my acting and my theater creation skills and repertoire since, because I'm like, okay, how am I going to, you know, this is great, like how am I going to do this show, right? You think about it vocally, you think about it character wise but I think also what a lot of actors forget to do is think about, I mean, a lot of people think about how they're moving, right? But I feel like there is a certain way that dancers think about how they're moving that actors don't, and so it's very interesting to bring that way of thinking into a theatrical space, you know?
Yeah, totally. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I noticed, like, in this play, everyone is really good at being really over the top with the physical comedy.
Yeah.
I was wondering, yeah, was that something that just happened naturally with you guys, or was that your director influencing that?
So she definitely told us to go over the top. Like,
yeah.
Our director, Karen, who's great. I love her very much. One of her big notes was like, I want you to go so far that I need to tell you to pull it back, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's such a great place to live in, and she gave us so much room to be in that. It was really nice to just have kind of like the leash taken off, right? And just like, okay, go, do whatever you want, you know? That's clearly apparent, and that a lot of people are very big, you know?
Was there ever a moment where she had to tell you to pull back, that you guys were doing too much?
Yes. Yeah. No.
Really?
I'm trying to think of of when that was. I remember that there definitely were some times she was like, okay, too far. She definitely said it to Jordan, who plays Max, at one point. Because there was some definitely times where he's very much going over the top with his character. So he definitely got that note before. I think me and Kenneth, who played Aldo, might have gotten that note. I think maybe like once when we did the first scene where we're talking to Teresa about how we believe that we're cheating on the other, right, and everything, and we're kind of not really clued into what's actually going on. And definitely there was a lot of like very there's a lot of overacting going on, a lot of Al Pacino type lines being thrown out, which was a lot of fun. But it's good to play in that, and then it's great when you have to pull back. So yeah.
Right, so do you have any favorite scenes from the play, like as a whole?
Yes. No. I mean, oh god, I'm trying to think of. I love the ending scene is very funny, like Rando's whole thing. I mean, I love the scenes I'm in. Not to be that guy, yeah. But you know,
no, me too.
I really like the scene where we both realize after Rhea leaves and goes to make us a coffee, where we have our little back and forth of like, what do you bring this up for? No, what do you mean? I love you too. But no, like that kind of, we have such a we built such a good chemistry in that scene. It was so fun to be in that, and yeah, I feel like that one of my favorites, I'd say.
Yeah, totally. Okay, well, so what's next for you? For like, are you auditioning or?
Yeah, there's some stuff in the works, hopefully. But currently, right now, I'm hopefully gonna. I'm waiting on to hear back from the Revolver Festival in June. I sent in an application with my my friend and collaborator, Katie Garasim, who's also a graduate of SFU. So, fingers crossed on that. We'll see how that happens. But even if we don't get in, we're hopefully going to be producing the show sometime next year, potentially. I'm working out of a new studio space that me and a couple of other friends and collaborators have rented. We've got a studio space out in East Van called The Wormhole. We do monthly like 5-minute performance nights. We do like movie nights and stuff where it's just open for anyone to come in, and we show local art in amongst our circles. But you know, people can come in and watch and have a good time. So that's kind of what I'm working on at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's amazing. Thanks for talking to us about that. People can come check out The Wormhole.
Yeah, they can. We're on Instagram at Through the Wormhole Theater. So check that out. And yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, very cool. Well, so thanks so much for doing this interview with me. That's great. Is there anything else you want to say before we leave?
Come see the best restaurant in the world ever. We are open until November 16th. So, yeah.
True that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Bird Note. A massive bird soars along the New England coastline, above nesting islands and cliffs inhabited by puffins and other seabirds. This bird's broad black wings measure more than 5 feet across, in bold contrast with its white head and tail. Its beak is long and thick. A bald eagle might come to mind, but this is no eagle. It's a great black-backed gull, the world's largest gull. Great black-backed gulls can be found on both sides of the North Atlantic, and their diet, like that of other large gulls, includes fish, squid, and winter visits to landfills. But it's their reputation as serious predators of other birds that really sets this huge gull apart. During the nesting season, great black-backed gulls prey on eggs and nestlings of other seabirds. They'll also hunt adult seabirds like puffins and grebes, and songbirds as big as a grackle. Just over a century ago, these birds were nearly wiped out by feather hunters and egg collectors. And though their populations recovered with help from environmental protections, great black-backed gulls are in decline once again. And scientists are still trying to figure out why. What we can say for certain is that this majestic gull that soars like an eagle is a marvel worth fighting for. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at EmbarkSustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at EmbarkSustain.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. Thanks to Katie for that preview, review, interview about the best restaurant in the world. Check it out. You can also check out Katie's show on Friday at noon, where she'll be talking about that in more depth, giving a real live off-the-cuff chat about the play. So check that out. Noon tomorrow. Okay, we're right into the last 9-8 minutes of this program, so that leaves us with time for music, I think. And so we're going to hear from Asanabi from their new record, Edge of the Earth. This is Into the Fire. Thanks for hanging out with me this hour. Democracy Now! Is up next, and I'll see you next time. Bye.
Put it in the fire, 'cause nothing is forever. You put your life in logic, things you cannot measure. So put it in the fire, or you're gonna get burned. The things that you admire come of lessons learned. You believe in fate, just leave it to the stars. But do you make your choices, then prove it with the scars?
eventually go. Eventually go.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hi.